The acclaimed Ira Kaufman podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Tampa's first family of Ford is 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Don't worry, Drive Curry needs service. They've got 100 loaner vehicles available, or they'll come out to your house, do the work at your property, or they'll come and pick you up, bring you in, get you in a loaner. And amazing, they will do anything to serve customers at Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry Ford is exceeding any advertised price, beating it by $100. Take a screenshot, cut it out of the newspaper. There's no catch. Bring it into the dealership. Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping today. All right, Ira, we sit here after practice at One Buck Palace. It's the afternoon. You got some lunch food in front of you. We are 1 week away from the preseason opener, and we are also 1 week away from the big Ira Kaufman birthday bash and Bucks game watch party Saturday, August 10th, Whiskey Wings Sports Bar and Grill in Oldsmar, 4013 Tampa Road. Party at 5 o'clock. We're going to start roasting Ira before 6 o'clock. Cake, birthday cake at 6:30. Bucks Bengals kickoff at 7. Great place to watch the game. We've got some very exciting guests that have been invited, Ira, and hopefully at least a couple of them come through. Fans will really like that. And just come on out and have a great time. Free cake. We've got some other surprises. Ira, are you excited?
Nicole Kidman said she might stop by if she can. I'm looking forward to it. Now, Steve, you said 1 week away from the party. More importantly for this podcast, we're 5 weeks away from opening day. 5 little weeks. And Jane Daniels is getting ready for the Bucks. And I don't care what Todd Bowles or anybody else says. I think they're already knee-deep in trying to figure out what to do about the Commanders' offense, which revolves around Jane Daniels. I don't know how much he's going to play in the preseason, Steve, but I do know one thing. Todd Bowles is more worried about Daniel's feet than he is Daniel's arm, and he's got a pretty good arm.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what, Ira? Todd Bowles said a long time ago, early this year, that he prepares for the first 3 games with his staff very early in the spring. They start, and then after that, you know, they go from there. But I did go back and look at all the first 3 games of Todd Bowles' coaching career. No real pattern to figure out there. He's not necessarily better or worse in the first 3 games. But, you know, something we'll talk about. So, Sage.
But there's not going to be a lot of tape on Jaden Daniels.
Are you going to have some cocktails at your party, your birthday party?
I believe I will. I'm going to order. I'm not going to be a baby and rely on Lee DeKemper's tater tots. I'm not going to do that. My wife will be there with me, and we're going to order. We're in this full bore.
All right. So, again, Saturday, August 10th, Ira's birthday party and Bucks game kickoff at 7. Party is at 5. All the details at joebucksfan.com. Ira, good luck in the storm. Lee, you as well. And all our listeners as well. You never know what's going to happen with this kind of thing. A ton of rain is supposed to be coming. And if anything happens, you need to be prepared. And that means you need to go now before you get your power out and all this other issues and mold and water in your house. Florida's EliteRestoration.com is who you need to visit, so you can see their services and understand why you need to call them first.
I saw a potential of 5 or 6 inches of rain in West Central Florida.
I saw something up to 12 inches in parts of the Tampa Bay area. So, you know, that generates tremendous problems. And Florida's Elite Restoration is there for everybody who's got a problem in their home, from storm damage to water damage, mold, fire, whatever it is. They are there for you 24/7, including in the storms and afterwards when you really need them most. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Get there now and call them immediately. Let them know when you do call that you heard about them from Ira Kaufman or from JoeBucksFan.com, and they'll give you $500 back if you eventually need their services after you get your free evaluation at your property with all the great technology. If you need them, they'll give you $500 back, and that's cash for your deductible or just cash back. Good luck out there, Florida.
And check them out before you call your insurance company.
Yeah, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. I opened the podcast with a note about Bill Curry Ford, but you know what? They're just rolling out the deals, and it's August, and it continues. Not only are they matching any advertised price, $100 on top of that goes in your pocket. They are committed to the best prices. They're fantastic. A mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, Bill Curry Ford.com.
And Steve, General Manager Sean Sullivan, you never know, Lee. He could show up at the party. And if he does and you're interested in the Ford, you can talk a little business with Sean.
Hey, you know what? He is planning to come. And you know what? I bet Sean would give a party discount, an Ira Kaufman birthday party discount. I'm going to talk to him about that. You know, there's always the Ira Kaufman discount in effect, but a party discount, I think, would be pretty sweet. An extra couple hundred bucks.
And
Sean, make it happen.
And if there's any cake left over, some lucky fan may be able to take some cake home. I don't think there's going to be any cake left, though.
All right, Sage. So Lee and I have been patrolling One Buck Place. The Bucks just finished Thursday, Friday padded practice. Today was underwear football. And
now they're off for a couple of days,
off for a couple of days, which Todd Bowles said is nothing unique, but you and I and Lee agreed that it is unique for this time of year. But you know what? You know, it's such a happy camp. Everything's going great except for some injuries, which we're going to talk about, the big ones and the small ones. But for the most part, everybody's in tune. Levante David's agreeing that it's the best chemistry ever. I asked him that the other day. Better than the Brady era. Everybody's happy. Everything's good. Everything's wonderful. And I'm wondering if, you know what, if everything's so great, do you sometimes lose your edge a little bit, that you're just kind of too happy with everybody? Maybe a little bit of, not drama, but a little bit of something can help a team?
Once again, Steve Isbitt's trying to look under rocks, crawl under rocks, and looking for a scorpion in the Arizona desert when everything looks beautiful, except for some recent injuries. We've talked about chemistry, Lee. I believe it. I think it's true for this team. You're saying, well, it might be true, but I don't think that gets them a win. And you're probably right, Lee. You're probably right about that. But it's a tight group, Lee. It's a tight group. People are happy. They're paid. I don't know how Godwin's thinking about his future with the Bucks. We don't know. But Winfield, and I'm going to go right to the Glazers on this. When they feel a guy's an elite player, and when they feel a guy's a hell of a representative for the Bucks, like a Wirfs, and like a Winfield, and Jason Light says, hey, guys, they're going to be the highest paid player at their position in the whole National Football League.
And they say,
go ahead and do it. They deserve it. That says something about the organization.
I see what you're saying about the culture.
Yeah, culture.
You know, this mysticism.
With a small C.
Football mysticism. I thought of what Steve was saying a couple of days ago. Is it too good to be true? You know, like I wrote the other day, and it was like almost a throwaway paragraph. I guess culture is nice, but at the end of the day, it's all about production. You can have the most tight-knit team you've ever had, all best friends, but if they don't produce, you don't win.
Lee says, give me a freaking pass rush. You can have your culture.
Give me the biggest a-hole in the NFL. If that SOB can get you 8 sacks, he's going to help you win games.
Now, Steve, the flip side, and I understand what you're saying with this kumbaya.
I'm not saying I'm asking.
Steve, maybe the saving grace in that regard, where players aren't playing with an edge. Lee, maybe the saving grace is the disrespect card that they're always playing.
That's a factor.
You know, whether they really believe in that, I think they do.
They do.
And, you know, I mean, there were people that said they're going 3-14 or 2-15. That's a fact. And now, again, they're not favored to win the division. They are not. I don't see why not. To me, it's all about
It's all about, you know.
They don't believe in Mayfield, and they like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, it's about the messiah of quarterbacks known as Kirk Cousins. He will cure all ills. He will feed all with just a couple of loaves of bread.
You think they're over this no respect thing, or you think it's still there?
Well, Charles Davis, who has access to the building we don't of CBS, he's a friend of ours, really good guy. Steve, wasn't his quote, the Bucks are seething about the disrespect?
That's a strong word.
Yeah, that's the word he used, seething.
I haven't seethed since I got the check from some fancy restaurant a couple of weeks ago.
I was going to wait till later, but Lee brought it up, and I got to go there now. First, anybody who didn't listen, Todd Bowles was on our last podcast. Go back. It's on your podcast platform or at JoeBucksFan.com.
And he closed with a Brooklyn accent. That's
and
he did
an impression of the Sage, which was interesting. But I do have to say, Ira, he was very clear. He doesn't need a double-digit sacker because he's getting 40-plus sacks a year. And he said to you, yeah, if the double-digit sacker pushes us over the edge to 52, yeah, he's going to be an impact guy. But if we have a double-digit sacker and we're getting 35 sacks, who cares?
But then, Steve, then
you countered.
Then
I countered,
said, doesn't he require resources that you can utilize?
Well, he countered back and said, I'd have to see that. To believe it. So that told me right there, well, even though the whole organization is trying to find an edge rusher, we saw the draft feature and stuff on Buccaneers.com. Bowles isn't worried about it if he feels he can manufacture it. What are your thoughts there, guys?
Well, based on his history, Lee, I understand his confidence. I mean, they've been incredibly consistent, but Lee, only in the sack total, which, you know, that's the focal point. Everybody looks at that. But
for good reason.
For good reason. But you and I also like pressures.
You
and
like
we
pressures.
We like hitsers. And we like hits.
Pressures is very simply good quarterbacks' pressure doesn't phase them.
But if you don't.
Sacks phase them.
Okay.
Sacks are final. That's finite.
They're supposed to be drive killers.
They are
supposed to be drive killers.
No, Warren Sharp, last year, I haven't seen an update, but last year it was dramatic. Anytime a team suffers a sack on a possession, like 70% of the time it results in a punt.
In a punt.
And punts are turnovers too. All these defensive guys, oh, I got to have a turnover. No, you need to get the ball back, and that's called punting. Punting is result of good defense. Good fundamental play. Get a punt. Get the ball back that way. Make a team suffer. Put the quarterback on his butt. Get it done.
Bowles is masterful, Steve, at cobbling together the sack total.
Yeah,
he is.
You talked about it. It was a great moment in that interview with you challenging him, and he came right back. And interesting perspective from the coach.
It was a great interview by Eric.
Yaya Diaby.
If Yaya Diaby gets 12 sacks, Bowles ain't turning that down.
Ah, thank you. Did he run off JPP? Did he run off Shaq? No.
So, look, Diaby went down with the ankle injury. We assume it's an ankle sprain. How severe? They didn't put a grade on it, so everybody can't run to the internet and see how many weeks it'll take for him to be back. But they're targeting week one, which makes sense for Diaby. But, Sage, I got to point this out. I haven't heard it anywhere else. But, you know, when Diaby went down, and before he went down, I was looking at the field at $1. And you know what? It was, I'm not going to say it was soggy, but it was certainly extra soft that day. I had walked on it. A lot of divots around, multiple days of practice. I don't know if the field was an issue in that injury. No one's going to come out and say that. But you know what? They don't tarp that field for some reason. I don't know why, but they don't. And they have other practice fields that are pristine.
Was it the field near the bleachers?
Yeah, field near the bleachers, right? So you have field two and field three.
I don't see those fields being utilized.
They're really not used because the fans are in one
spot.
But those are pristine versus the divots and the reality of football. I've never seen a practice, maybe you and Lee have. I have never seen anybody go out and adjust the field and inspect it and look for, you know, have a maintenance guy go out there during a break and look for divots or things like that. I am not saying that's what caused it, but it made me really think about it more.
It's a pretty fair point by Steve, and you haven't missed a practice yet. They're really wearing out that field, Lee. Wearing it out.
I mean, that's not anything new. They've done this for years. And like Steve said, they use that field because that's the closest to the bleachers. Once they won't have fans coming to practices any longer, which I think two more practices where fans are there. After that, then they can use those other fields. Now, before I say anything here, Steve, I want you to know I'm just joking. So is it fair now because Diaby may have blown his ankle because maybe he stepped in a divot? Could it be that the corporate chick that was running Secret Service is now the head field technician at Buccaneer.com?
Well, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, Lee. That's funny, but
she works for the Falcons. What are you talking about?
Steve, you're just conjecturing.
I know. It's just, fans are out there watching thousands of them.
They have personnel that is specifically assigned to the field.
Well, of course, Steve, yes.
And to check it out. So I think if they thought there was any bit of a problem, Steve, hopefully it doesn't repeat itself in the next.
The field in Munich was far worse than what the Bucs practice field is.
So, Sage, the good news in some ways is Diaby is now knocked out of the summer. So that means they're going to get a much better look at all these guys that would be taking Yaya snaps, preseason, joint practices are like 12 days away in Jacksonville. And who's going to benefit most, in your opinion, from Diaby being off the field?
Randy Gregory?
Well, I like to say Logan Hall, but I'm not going to say Logan Hall because you've heard me before, Lee. I don't like saying it. I don't have a super amount of confidence. In Hall at the pro level. I think he's a guy without a position. I've said that in the beginning. Maybe Anthony Nelson. I mean,
yeah,
he's a good spot player. Lee, what would happen if he has to play a game where he plays 75% of the snaps? Is he going to wear down?
When he plays a physical team, he gets taken out.
But he makes some plays.
Yes, he does.
He does. He makes some plays.
He does, but like, you know, a couple years ago, at San Francisco when the Bucks hosted Dallas in the playoffs, he was getting blown up play after play after play.
Steve, the natural guy would be Braswell, maybe, that you would look at. But I'm always looking at Braswell. I always think of him coming off the left edge, like Shaq Barrett used to. And I'm not messing around with Diaby. He was on the right side. I'm not flipping Diaby to the left side.
The guy who's I've seen, just watching every practice, that had flashed more as far as pass rushers.
You better not say Marquise Watts.
No. The guy who's flashed more outside of Diaby, of course, the next guy was Nelson. Nelson is having a hell of a camp. Now, I haven't seen him. Like I say, he hasn't flashed the last day or two, but up until the last couple of days, he has been flashing. I got to tell you this, Ivy, real quick. A couple of days ago, I was talking to someone with the Bucks, and fortunately, Steve and I, and you two, we're allowed after practice to talk to all kinds of people. Coaches, front office people, hell, even Joel Glazer. We're allowed to talk to all these people off the record and get some background information. So I spoke with the guy with the Bucks 2 days ago. I said, hey, who's someone that's doing really well that we're not writing about or someone else is not writing about? Who's doing well that we're not, still on our radar? The guy thought for a couple seconds. Then he looked at me and goes, last two practices, Logan Hall. And then, lo and behold, today, he gets
I'm glad I finished my lunch before you said that.
Then, lo and behold, today, which would be three practices, he gets a pick six.
Who threw the ball?
Mr. Trask.
Mr. Trask.
It was a terrible throw, but...
Was it a screen pass? Or?
I don't know what the hell it was, It was a terrible throw, that much I know. And Logan Hall actually dropped back into coverage. Like two or three steps, he dropped back. Because I asked him after practice, I said, did you drop back? And he was like, yeah, I dropped back. That was the play call. He dropped back, and to his credit, even though the ball was thrown right at him, he took it, and he took it to the house.
Boy, Jason Light would have a lot more bounce in his step, Steve, if Logan Holst has a good training camp.
Well, you know what? Let me give you another behind-the-scenes thing, Ira, that I've noticed. I know you love these kinds of nuggets. These kinds of nuggets. Liam Cohen, offensive coordinator. What I've noticed with him, a little different from Canales, is he really seems to have a super fast relationship with the defensive players. I've seen him now multiple days talk to defensive players after practice about certain plays, and I saw him go up to a player.
What gives you problems? What?
Well, no. I've seen him just sort of, like, I saw him go up to one player and talk about a certain play that was run a couple of times and be like, oh, man, yeah, we ran that with the Rams, and it was dirty, man. We burned this team on it and that team. And, a lot of excitement, but there's a lot of reaction to him and just some X's and O's talk. I've seen him do a lot of – but it's not like, what did you see? It's like just like he seems to have a personal relationship with some of these guys, which, you know, he really feels like just an extraordinarily confident – guy dialed in. I mean, he just exudes a lot of confidence, but the relationship, he's starting to feel to me when I see him after practice, as silly as it sounds, like a potential head coach.
You know, one component of this thing with Cohn and his enthusiasm for this job in particular, after being in the college ranks last season, and we talked about it before the podcast starts, which is worth mentioning again, the hands-off approach by Todd Bowles when it comes to running this offense. He comes from the Sean McVay tree, which a lot of guys do. You saw what Baldinger told me the other day. It's all the rage now. We want McVay's guys. We want it. And so here comes Cohn. And, Lee, I dare say, without knowing the inner workings of the Los Angeles Rams, when you're working for Sean McVay, like when you were working for John Gruden. And, by the way, McVay started his pro career, I think, in Tampa.
He was with Chucky, yeah.
Yeah, he was. When you're working with a Gruden or a Sean McVay, you got to answer to these guys. They're involved. I don't think Bowles goes to the offensive meetings, Lee. I'm not even sure he does. I think Cohn feels emboldened. It's like, this is my offense, and I don't have to look over my shoulder. I think that's invigorating.
Is it?
It's downright liberating.
Well,
Lee,
I'd prefer Bowles to be hands-off. And we hear that, but hearing and reality is two different things. For example.
Well, Lee, with all the crazy Canales calls up the middle last year, if Bowles was hands-on, he would have walked in that office in week six and say, stop doing that.
Well, I would hope so, but put it that way. I'm just a little bit dubious.
You agree with me that Bowles is not going to be hands-on with this offense?
I don't know that. That's why I said I'm a little bit dubious. We criticized Dirk Cutter for being too hands-off. He never went to the defensive meetings. He's just like, oh, you don't want me messing with the defense. And that was his excuse.
Might have been his downfall.
Could have been his downfall. So I can't, in good faith, criticize Cutter for being so hands-off and then praising Bowles for doing the same thing. Now, do I want the Bucks to be what Bowles probably wants them to be? Of course not. But to be fair to Cutter and just to be consistent, I can't sit here and say I want the head coach to not have anything to do with the other side of the room at all. Like hands, like completely hands off, like almost like they're a separate team. I see what you're getting at, Ivory. I don't want a defensive guy having much to do with an offense, but I don't think it's healthy for Bim never going to a meeting, never being involved. I think you're risking not just splintering the team, but not being on the same page about what you're trying to accomplish on a game.
But Steve doesn't have Bowles have his hands full as the defensive signal caller? I mean, that's a heavy responsibility. And all the fires he puts out as a head coach.
Yeah, it's a fine line. Who knows how it's going to evolve.
It's a fine line.
It's a fine line. He's got enough time to sit in on some meetings and give his opinion. It's just, you know, how he handles it when they don't listen to him.
By the way, I've been building up Liam Cohn running this offense. Didn't Bowles say a week or two ago? It's Baker Mayfield's offense. Yeah. It's all Mayfield.
Sage, wanted to run this past you because it's a little bit different. So it's just almost off topic, but you were raving about Jason Light earlier, so I figured I'd mention this. Now, as you guys knew, and I'm still as I got into preparing this Jason Light feature for the summer.
And where is that feature?
Well,
Steve?
I realized that, you know what, after I was putting it together, I'm like, you know what, I want to talk to some players and really get more, and, you know, I'll maybe throw it out over the Labor Day weekend there, or Labor Day week when things are, people are waiting for the season.
Is this going to be a story or a podcast?
No, it's going to be a series. So I talked to Mike Evans about Jason Light privately a couple of times, and when I got back to him today to chat, I didn't bring it up. He said, look, man, he said, Jason Light absolutely deserves to be in the Ring of Honor. He really does. And he went on to explain that a little bit. And what do you think of that? I have said he's already done enough. Super Bowl, and then after the Super Bowl, three consecutive division titles. Mike Evans says it's the biggest no-brainer. Well, what do you think?
Well, I mean,
is he there yet?
Then, of course, Rich McKay saying, what about me? He was the architect. His first two picks were Hall of Famers.
That's fair.
They made the playoffs consistently before he absconded to Atlanta.
We know why, too.
But I don't think it's outrageous that Light would get consideration for it. I don't know when it would. Well, I mean, they put coaches in there, but there's no general, there's no executive.
Yeah.
There's no executive.
And yeah, that's fair about McKay. You're right.
But I will say this, Lee, for a guy that was very dubious about Light after 2018.
We know.
He's done a lot better job the last 5 or 6 years. He has. He's learned a lot. And he's grown. Not everybody grows.
That's a
good
point.
He's learned from his mistakes.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
he's learned from the Vernon Hargraves of the world.
He's quick to admit that, too, that I made mistakes.
It was an interesting take by Evans, only because I didn't ask him that. I didn't even bring up the Ring of Honor at all. That came from him.
So he's reading Joe Buck's Man, or he's listening to Ira?
I don't know what he's doing. But
And he wasn't necessarily, Steve, talking specifically about his own contract situation.
No, not at all. This was just about personnel and team development. So going back to camp, everybody continues to say, and it's not every single day, and there was a deep ball to Trey Palmer that was a great deep shot from Baker Mayfield. They finally hit one, and Jalen McMillan's not your deep shot guy, but Palmer got one, and I think that made an impact, Lee, in my mind. I don't know what you think, because there have been so few deep shots, home run connections.
Today?
This summer, from Mayfield to anybody. That one from Palmer a few days ago really stands out. Like,
yeah.
Whoa, that's not what we saw
last year. Wait a minute, Steve. Wait a minute. Are you telling me I need to prepare for another season where they don't take the Sage's advice and throw the ball downfield at least 5 times a game and try to get a couple of flags? Am I facing another year like that of these 8-yard passes to Chris Godwin? Steve, that's why I think Palmer's important. I think he adds that element.
He does, but you know what? They weren't effective at that. What they were effective with later in the season, specifically the game against the Eagles in the playoffs, when they got him the ball short and just said, run with it. And boom, there he goes. And given the fact, and I always bring this up because you know, next gen stats doesn't lie like some others do. He was the fastest guy coming out of his routes than anybody.
Those crossing patterns.
Well, just out of his routes. They didn't specify which routes.
That's where you want him to get the ball on these.
I don't care what kind of pattern he runs. He's damn quick. Get him the ball. If you can't hit long, and you know, odds are you're not going to hit long, the percentages just aren't there. So get this guy the ball short, where you know the percentages will be high, and let him take over with his wheels.
I want to see some more deep shots.
Sage, I think what's happening is they're not throwing the big deep home run ball to Mike Evans because they don't want to push his hamstrings. They don't want to risk anything like that.
He hasn't had a hamstring pull yet.
So he hasn't been running out for deep bombs. And McMillan's not that guy. Godwin is more over the middle seam kind of stuff. And I think they'll obviously be going deep to Mike Evans. I think the chemistry between Evans and Mayfield, what they have been doing, has been fantastic.
Is Godwin still looking outstanding?
Ready to go. Evans is ready to go. Evans got held out again today, did he not? When he on floppy hat patrol?
Floppy hat day for Mike Evans. Floppy hat.
Week one could be next weekend, although technically it is for preseason. But week one, the regular season, could be next weekend. Godwin's ready to go. Evans is ready to go.
McMillan has a so-so rookie season, and Palmer doesn't take a step up. You think that'll have a huge impact on how they look at Godwin going forward and whether bringing him back?
You just say Miller? Who's Miller?
McMillan.
Oh, McMillan.
I heard McMillan.
If he has a mediocre rookie season.
I personally, I'm going to say this right now, I believe in my heart that Godwin's 100% back unless he has a bad year. If he has a Chris Godwin year of any type, he'll be back. They'll pay him because that's where the league goes. That's what the Bucs have been doing. That's been their pattern. And they'll pay him.
But how will they pay him vis-a-vis what they're paying Evans?
Ooh. Well, they'll pay him. I mean, he's not going to get number one receiver money because he's not a number one receiver on the elite scale, but he'll get at least what he's been getting now, which is $20 million.
Couldn't he decide to test free agency? Couldn't he?
Why not? He could, sure. Why not?
He could, but if they don't throw deep to him this year, and I mean this is all seriousness, if
he only gets three or four touchdown
catches.
You
can count on one hand maximum. You may be missing a few fingers. You can count on Brian Baldinger's hand. I meant to say Jason Pierre-Paul's hand. You can count on his hand how many deep shots they threw to Chris Godwin last year. If they don't throw more deep to Godwin this year, no one is going to pay him number one receiver money at 29 years old when we don't even know if you can catch deep shots. It's just not going to happen.
Lee, suppose he only gets four touchdown catches. That'll be the third year in a row. It's substandard reaching the end zone. Maybe he's frustrated enough and says, let me go somewhere else, Godwin.
I'll repeat one of my famous sayings that you really like. Winning is the greatest perfume.
What I'm trying to say is if he catches 85 balls, 1,100 yards, 5 touchdowns, the Bucs will pay him $20 million, long-term deal, and he'll love it.
Why? Because he's a good representative also?
Because you don't throw those guys away. Why would you throw those guys away?
What if McMillan has a good season?
Well, that's just it. If McMillan goes crazy, then that's the fly in the ointment.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am not seeing the deep shots to McMillan either, so he'd have to go crazy inside. I don't know. I'm dubious of McMillan. I like him. He looks good, but I'm dubious, Ira.
Steve makes a great point. As much as everybody's been stroking McMillan, and he somewhat deserves it.
Yeah, he looks good.
Palmer's getting more snaps. You know, people are asking me, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I said, if you just go by the number of snaps on the first team, for example, I get asked about Payne Durham. Well, right now, I think Payne Durham's a clear number two tight end, just based on the snaps he's getting with the first team. Devin Culp is getting snaps, but not many, but he's getting snaps with the first team. That tells me he's probably number three. And so I'm not sure McMillan is a starter yet, just based on the snaps that Palmer is getting.
Today, Sage, Todd Bowles praised Kokeef for his return, and that he said he's blocking well again. He's blocking Devin Culp, who catches balls in practice and flashes. But every time Bowles is asked about the guy, he doesn't want to say good things. He's like, oh, he needs a lot of work on this, a lot of work on that. It almost feels like he's trying to motivate the guy. But
yeah,
apparently they want to see Culp make tougher catches, not just all the ones that are
routine,
you know, in a small radius.
I think it's hard for Keefe to get on the field, Lee. Maybe third and two, you bring him in as an extra blocking tight end. Now, I got a question for you two gentlemen. who watch every practice like animals.
I didn't get her number.
Is there any way in this world, in your mind, that Rashad White could get as many touches as he did last year when he was number two in the league to McCaffrey, Steve? Is that correct? And close to it. He was almost number one. So with the addition of Bucky Irving and Rashad White's 2 years of struggles running the football, is there any way he could have the same workload as he had last year?
The way you qualified it, no. Now, if you don't factor in Bucky Irving, if you're asking me if he gets so many touches, not runs, but touches, I would maybe. Bucky Irving, you know, I was just talking about snaps of the first team. Bucky Irving's getting a lot of snaps of the first team. Not as many as Rashad White. I'd say the first 2-3 day sessions, the first couple of 3 day sessions, man, that's a little clearer. White was not running the ball that much. And something that jumped out on me fairly recently that, you know, is after Steve and I talked, and Steve agreed with me that White wasn't running the ball that much, as in they weren't calling his number to run the ball that much. He went down to the third team one day, and he ran the ball like 5 times in a row. And I was like, that's weird. He wasn't running the ball the first team, though he was getting snaps a lot with the first team. He was only running the ball with the third team. And I thought that was really odd. Someone told me, well, maybe that was some kind of motivating factor. Like, you know, they were fed up with his running, and they said, okay, if you're not going to follow the box, you're not going to hit the ball, hit the hole hard, you'll just go with the third team.
Do you have the sense that they're happy with Bucky Irving's early progress?
Well, I'm not sure, but I do know that we asked Todd Bowles on your podcast to name his early standouts in camp and didn't name a running back, so I can say that. It's hard to tell. Obviously, nobody's tackling. It's all the same bullshit, phony run game stuff that you see and try to get, you know, excited about.
He'll get plenty of work in the preseason, right, Steve?
Irving. Irving will get a ton of work in the preseason. Yeah. But to answer your question, Ira, I think Rashad White might get even more touches because I think the Bucs, unless they see something really special from him early, they're going to know, hey, man, this is not a, and this is how the front office thinks, this is not a guy that we're going to give a second contract to. He's on year three out of year four. We're not going to hand a big contract to a high rep running back who's marginal. So, you know what? Let's get as much as we can out of him. Don't worry about it. Make sure he's fresh for the postseason and however we got to do
that. What if they think Irving makes people miss?
Well, no, they'll use whoever's effective, but I don't think they're going to hold back on White. Unless he looks special early, I don't think they're going to really care.
Now, just real quick, so people don't think that White has been demoted to third team. Maybe a practice or two after I saw that, when he was running like crazy with the third team, he ran the ball with authority. When he was getting the ball, he ran with authority. He ran with a purpose, as Vince Lombardi would say. And since then, he's been always with the first team.
Lee, I'll say it one more time before I throw it over to Stevie here. And you don't like it, Lee, but I'm going to keep saying it.
run the ball?
No, not run the ball, but here's what I'm saying.
Don't tell me balance.
If they take a step up in their efficiency when they run the ball, I think that will have a direct effect to taking this offense to another level.
Yeah, because they won't be able to focus so much on the pass.
The play action will work, and well, now it doesn't work.
And I'll say this again. There's all kinds of data out there that play action has no effect on the passing game. I know it's a cliche to say that, and it's a belief that some people have, but there's all kinds of data that show that one doesn't equal two here.
It's a core part of a lot of offenses in this league.
I'm not saying you shouldn't, but there's a theory out there that you can open up the pass game by faking handoffs. And there's all kinds of data that show that's a wives'
tale. Well, that's once you establish that you can run the ball. Then you got guys thinking out
there. To me, I hate all that data, or not all of it, but a lot of it, because what nobody weighs out of that data is if I'm running a lot or my share of play action, okay, how does play action change the running game when I hand off and teams are thinking, oh, well, this might be a pass, and the D lineman or the linebacker is not selling out on the run when it actually is a handoff that never gets talked about, and that's the other side of play action.
Here's what I'll give you, Ira.
I just want to create a little doubt in the defense, hesitancy.
This is what I'm going to say. To that point, last year, very few of any team stacked the box against the Bucs. They didn't respect the running game because they had no running game. they start putting guys in the box, that will open up some passes, obviously. So that's what I want. To your point, establish the run if you have to, if you want to be a running team. Establish that run, because they did not respect the run last year, nor should they have respected the run last year, because they didn't have a run.
And, Lee, if you bring up the linebackers closer to the line of scrimmage because they're a little more
God
concerned,
will burn them.
Then it could open things up for Palmer on those quick passes or whatever.
Oh, not it could. It will. Them. It yes. will, yeah.
Sage, don't worry. Drive Curry. Bill Curry Ford. Make no payments all summer. Yes, that's a thing.
Hey, I thought I was supposed to say, don't worry, drive Curry.
You just did.
You just took it away from me.
BillCurryFord.com. Head to their website now. That's where you go shopping. Sage, go look for some inventory there at BillCurryFord.com. You'll be impressed. And now they have all sorts of cool video and pictures up about the new, totally reimagined, remodeled, redesigned, unbelievable dealership. You can get a little feel for what we've been talking about here.
And Steve, we're wishing the best for our loyal listeners in terms of this tropical storm.
Yeah.
When we get back, it'll be over. And we hope everybody is okay.
If it happens, it won't be over for a lot of people, especially those who've been affected. That's why you got to call Florida's Elite Restoration.com. As soon as something is an issue that you notice damage, call them. It's just they'll walk you through it. And get to their website now, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Iris Party, we heard all about that. Sage, I'll leave you with this because this was timely. You were talking about the running game. So, you know, a lot's been made of Cody Mauch, added 15 pounds. And he said he did it organically. It was pretty easy. A little more, a little protein shake, extra, little extra weight on the bar. All good. It worked out. Okay. So, but he was asked, you know, hey, how's it feeling? He's like, well, I don't know. Until the pads come on, I can't get a feel for it, you know? And, you know, I don't know what that'll feel
like. Sounds like him, too.
So that was last week. Well, I asked him today, hey, man, the pads have been coming on. You said you didn't have a, how you feeling the weight with the moving or whatever. He said, quote, still getting used to it a little bit, trying to find, like, the right body position to sit in some of these power rushes. So you've seen, from your experience, I wanted to ask. I know I've seen it. But over the years, how many times have you seen guys, defensive linemen or offensive linemen, they add weight in the offseason, and then a year later, they take the weight off, or vice versa, because that's no good for their game. I don't want anybody to think, in my mind, that Mauch adding 15 pounds is 100% a good thing.
You see it all the time. Guys fluctuate until they get to what they think is their ideal playing weight, and they probably do that in conjunction with the staff, the medical staff or whatever, the coaching staff, an optimum weight. So Vea's going down, Mauch's going up. The thing that strikes me the most about this weight issue, and I don't remember exactly when Bowles said it, but it was after the season. It might have been in Indy when we talked to Bowles at the Combine. But, Lee, you remember it. We need bigger bodies up
yeah.
front.
Yeah.
That was a tip-off.
We heard that Bowles said that to Light the middle of last season.
That was a tip-off. We need bigger bodies. He had to be talking about the run blocking.
Oh, yeah.
He had to.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought the pass blocking was adequate, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
It was adequate. Mayfield wasn't under siege. So here comes Bredesen. Good size. An oversized Mauch. Barton, you know, has a good frame. That's one of the reasons they're more confident they're going to run the ball.
Okay, we've been too goody-goody here. I got to ask Ira this.
All right.
Barton has had a lot of dubious snaps. How long can you put up with that?
Until you can replace him.
No, I
gave you the Mike Tomlin line. But
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, I don't think they're overly worried about it, Steve. He hasn't played center in a while. He hasn't. It's not like he played center this last year at Duke. He wasn't a center. But he's familiar with the position. He'll get over it. And I think by the end of camp, we're not going to be talking about it, I think.
Bowles said it. He didn't deny it's an issue. It can't happen is really what Bowles said the other day. His response to it, he had two in a row, I think it was, bad snaps.
Today, yeah.
But it's not a minor concern if they don't fix it. Not going to keep that job if he doesn't.
It blows up plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won't play if that's the case. But I think they'll give him, you know, they'll let him work through it just like they would a guy if he was fumbling. You know, same thing. You better stop it or otherwise you'll be playing guard, you know, where you don't have to touch the ball. All right, Ira, look, I just wanted to bring that up about the Mauch weight because we remember, I was thinking about it more. We remember back in 2009 when a new regime comes in, Jim Bates was the defensive coordinator. They asked everybody to gain weight. everybody wanted to add 20 pounds on the D-line. It backfired. I talked to Will Gulston the other day, Sage. He basically said he came in this year a little bit over 270, and he has a different plan to sort of put on some weight through camp. And he's played over 300 before, so they're always tinkering with it. It's got to work for each guy. Sage, what's your plan in these next couple of days?
Well, my plan is that we're going to do probably one more podcast lead before the party when I turn 40. And then we're going to absolutely do a post-party podcast, which would have all the details for people that don't show up. I'm looking forward to it.
You're
going to
shame them?
I got to give Steve credit. I was dubious when he first told me that, Ira, we're going to throw you a party.
Yeah, you kept asking. What do you mean?
I did. I kept asking him, and is this thing going to happen? You know what? It's a big figure, big numeral, and I'm looking forward to it. I think if the fans come out, it's going
to
be a good time.
Here's why you're looking forward to it. That means you're still on this side of the ground.
Oh, I like that, Lee.